Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
When is it useful to make a deal versus not make the deal? And it may be that when you see contempt in the other side, that tells you there are going to be compliance problems. It can tell you they will not follow through.
Right, or it may tell you, you know, when you talk about positive and negative negotiation zones, whether or not, you know, you actually have overlap. This is a deal that can be reached. Negative, look, we're just too far apart.
Clark Freshman trains people to spot emotions during negotiations, and way back in episode 38 of IDN, he explained how to look for leakage of information in the other side's facial expressions and body movements. Clark was recently in Italy, a country that might appear to have invented those concepts, and kindly dropped by my office to spend more time discussing the expression of emotions.
Top three would be contempt, fear, and various kinds of happiness.
Various kinds of happiness. Love it.
Unlike a certain hand gesture used by irate Italian drivers, the expressions Clark refers to are not culturally specific. The idea that expressions are universal and transcend human culture goes back to none other than Charles Darwin. For several decades, Darwin collected information on the expressions of animals, indigenous peoples around the world who'd not had contact with Western civilization, and subjects in an English insane asylum. He summarized his findings in his 1872 illustrated book, The Expressions of the Emotions in Man and Animals, commenting that, quote, "The young and the old of widely different races, both with man and animals, expresses the same state of mind by the same movements."
Not every language has an exact word for contempt. So when I've spoken to Germans, they have a lot of trouble finding the exact word for this. So it could be contempt, it could be scorn, it sometimes is looking down.
Clark Freshman's a professor at the University of California's Hastings College of the Law in San Francisco and a consultant with the Paul Ekman Group, named after its founder, Paul Ekman, whose name is practically synonymous with modern research on human expressions. In this first of three episodes, we look at the two negative emotions most likely to surface in a dispute negotiation, fear and contempt. How to spot them? Hint, not by staring deep into the other person's eyes. What they might mean and how they might be misinterpreted.
How can you detect fear?
Well, fear is one of fear, intense fear, what we call distress, is one of the easiest emotions to spot if you're looking in the correct place. The way that fear shows up in the eyebrows is that only the inner parts of the eyebrow by the nose go up. This causes kind of wrinkling on the forehead in the shape of a kind of horseshoe. That is very hard to consciously control. What people try to do is they bring the eyebrows together and then they bring them up. But when it's true distress, it happens all at once. It often happens very quickly, the kind of distress or agony.
Right, so it's a universal, involuntary expression. You're
correct.
Afraid, and it's the middle of your nose that's moving at the top part?
It's the eyebrows that are actually moving. So the eyebrows are moving together and up.
So if you're looking, where should you be looking?
So you'd be looking at the person's eyebrows. That would be one of the places that it shows up.
Focusing on their eyebrows.
Not so much at the eyes, right? So not so much at the eyes. Darwin first identified this, and he theorized and showed through examples this doesn't just show up in humans. This shows up in other primates as well. The other place that fear can show up. So let me say this. First place, this is incredibly reliable. It's very hard to fake. So if someone is showing that in a negotiation, they really are distressed. It's also relatively hard to conceal for the same reason. Those muscles are not under conscious control. The other place that fear can show up is in the mouth. The mouth can stretch to the side. Now that is something that is relatively easy to fake. And in fact, we sometimes do that with others, not because we're really afraid, but as a kind of signal to them of empathy. Ooh, I know that that must have been painful when we stretch our mouths to the side. Yeah. So that one is not nearly as reliable.
Sort of a tight grin.
A tight grimace.
Yeah. Okay. And these expressions can be very quick, right?
They can be very quick. They can be less than a second, one frame of video. So we know that they can show up in 1/30th of a second.
So to catch fear, you may have to be, if they don't want you to see that they're afraid, you may have to, focusing on that part of the face to see if there's a sign of fear.
Yes, that's correct. And what people are doing wrong often is looking in the wrong spot.
Okay, and what does fear mean? I mean, obviously they're afraid of something, but how might you interpret that in negotiation? Maybe they're not as confident as they say they are, or there's...
Well, two ways of looking at emotion in a negotiation. So one way is, and it's an important way, is just to know that wherever the emotion is coming from, whether they're afraid because they just remembered that their job might be cut utterly unrelated to the negotiation, or they're afraid that they forgot to tell their wife about something that was important, wherever the fear is coming from, that will affect the way that people negotiate. We know that when people have a negative mood like fear or anger or sadness, they view things in a more negative way. They're less creative. They're more likely to engage in competitive tactics, and they're more likely to break deals. They're more likely to lie.
Okay, so fear may not be related. It may just be background noise.
But we still want to deal with it. We want to consider making the person more comfortable. If things are going badly in the negotiation, if the person is saying no all the time and they're not being very creative, you come up with several different ways of settling a case, several different ways of doing a deal. They're saying no, 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 but they're showing fear. You might consider that that's because of the state that they're in of the fear, and you want to try to change that to see if you can get somewhere else. Okay, the second thing we want to do, besides noticing that fear, wherever it's from...
By the way, it may also be that you may have touched upon a weak point, that they now know that you can do a deal here. They're afraid that you now know where their negotiating strength or weakness is.
That's correct.
You may have exposed a position, and they're afraid, oh my gosh, now we're going to have to settle on something. I may have to accept this deal.
That's correct, and they may be afraid that they're going to... antagonize someone else within their organization. One example that I find very interesting, our research at Harvard Business School that Mike Wheeler and I did, we looked at some simulated real estate negotiations involving students and other administrators and teaching assistants there, was how confident people were. Often people said, I feel very confident. We're not so concerned about selling this particular property. We might even hold on to it. Or someone in another instance said, I feel that we're in a very strong bargaining position. That's what they're saying. But we saw in two instances, with one male, with one female, that they showed expressions of distress. That's very useful to know, because that tells you that you can push much harder than you otherwise might think. I was looking for an apartment in San Francisco recently, and I noticed that there weren't many people at the open house where people can come and look at the apartment. So I just very casually said, wow, I guess the market has really slowed down. And the person then showed fear on her face. That told me, wow, the market really has slowed down, and or she really does need to sell this place.
Did you rent from her?
No, I didn't really like that apartment too much. But had I wanted it, I would have gotten a lower price. Let's contrast that. Let's suppose I had said that. Let's deal with another emotion here. Let's suppose that I had said the exact same thing.
You've got to be a dangerous person to be walking around doing deals of these things.
Right. Well, and what's interesting is...
Do you bring a disclaimer with you when you go to negotiate a new apartment? Or
No, I don't. It's like I don't tell them that I'm a lawyer, and I don't tell them that I'm a law professor. I don't tell them what...
You teach facial expressions and stuff.
No, generally I generally
just,
I don't.
Excuse me,
do that.
Clark, I'm going to put this ski mask on.
Right, or dark glasses, or they're going to get Botox temporarily done. Contempt can last a little bit longer in the face. So I'll say what contempt is first. So contempt is one of the emotions people are least aware of when we test them. After we train them, hardly anyone ever misses it ever again.
Aware of it in their own selves, or aware
noticing it in others.
Noticing it in others.
People can also notice it in themselves by feeling those muscles as they show up. So contempt is...
Yeah, how do you spot contempt?
Easiest one. It's only one set of muscles. The mouth pulls to the side in a half smile.
Right, so it's lateral. It's side of the face.
Unilateral. It's the only emotion that is unilateral in a normal population.
And is it all in your mouth, or is it other muscles?
Yes, it's in the mouth, and like the sincere smile, which we'll get to in a moment, it also involves the upper cheeks, what would be known as facial unit number 6 in the facial action coding system.
It's an easy one, Easy one to spot because you just have...
only on one side.
If you look at the face, you'll see it. You don't have to focus on a particular side.
Yet. Well, you do need to be noticing that the mouth... You need to be looking at the mouth. If you're staring just into their eyes,
right.
You wouldn't necessarily notice it. But it's a pretty large gesture.
Because what you think the second time is that, you know, gazing into somebody's eyes, which people do to think that they can... I want to see, in fact, we say in Italian, I want to meet this person, you know, I say a quattro occhi, you know, two eyes, you know, two and two. That's not the way you want to be looking to see if they're telling the truth.
No.
Never look in their eyes.
No, it's not very useful. Now, there is some research on pupil dilation. People used to think that pupil dilation would be a good way of telling whether people are lying or not. Yeah. Turns out that that's not very successful because people's pupils dilate for all sorts of reasons. It is associated with fear.
Or mainly also the amount of light that might be in the room.
Well, the light, it's also associated with sexual arousal. It's also associated with physiological stress if people have certain heart conditions. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of people, I have sometimes a mitral valve prolapse. So I'm prone to, for just very mild reasons, my heart will race a little bit. And that would cause my eyes to dilate as well, potentially.
So gazing into the eyes is not a good way to... detect whether somebody's telling the truth or not.
No, you're wasting your time. So those are like the people who suffered from schizophrenia who'd be looking in the wrong part. Now, there's a very popular comedian who did Larry David. And Larry David, many times on his show, and if you look on my website at clarkfreshman.com, I have an example there where Larry David often will, in a very comic way, stare into people's eyes, turn his head, look directly into their eyes, as if that's going to reveal the truth. But that's generally a waste of time.
Waste of time. So we're looking for contempt. We want to look at this lateral movement,
this mouth, unilateral movement
mouth
on one
cheeks,
side of the
yeah.
one side of the face.
And it can be left. Is there a tendency of left or right, or is it?
No, there's not a tendency left or right.
Left-handed, right-handed people?
No, there's not any research suggesting that it's left or right based on the handedness. And even the same person can sometimes show it on one side of the face and sometimes on the other side. For those who are American or follow politics, Dick Cheney and George Bush showed a lot of contempt, a lot of this emotion. Dick Cheney constantly was showing this emotion. Now, why does it matter in negotiation? Well, especially in international negotiation, contempt is... or scorn is when one is looking down on someone else or on oneself. So it could be self-scorn. One could be judgmental of oneself. But in the negotiation you're talking about, the contempt could easily be that you or someone else has inadvertently violated some cultural expectation. So one stereotypical one is the American who wants to start bargaining right away, and somebody perhaps who is Swiss or Japanese who wants to get to know the person first. Now, when I was training someone with your organization, GE Natural Gas, there was someone at the break who said, well, we were negotiating with somebody from Saudi Arabia, and we were told this is the way they negotiate, have tea with them first, get to know them, play golf. And after we did this for a little while, the person actually said, you know, I'm just an engineer. You don't have to treat me like some crazy Arab that you have to woo.
Yeah.
So we don't know
But it's GE Oil and Gas. I'm often very skeptical about a lot of what passes for cultural norms in negotiations. I've had similar encounters where people have said, you know, you need to be very solicitous towards certain cultural practices. And when the other side says, we're here to do business.
In next week's IDN, Clark returns to discuss happiness, its various forms, how to detect them, and what they might mean in a dispute negotiation. You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.